Okay, so last week, now you were on chapter 3, about what do you communicate to your husband. Is there anything we need to talk about there to finish up? Did y'all have any?
Oh, we did not finish.
Okay, so we'll come back to finish that. But I did tell you that I wanted to come back and do a couple of things in chapter 2 before we move forward. Because I think still there's some introductory pieces about how we communicate with each other, with those who aren't in the church, just how we present ourselves. And if you go to page 15 for the group discussion questions, I do think one of the best things about this book is she has excellent starter questions to get us thinking and talking. And the first one says, there's so many terrible sins, because, you know, as humans, we tend to rank sins. Even though God tells us that's not right, we tend to say, oh, he murdered somebody, and that's much, much worse than being a gossip. When actually the harm that can be caused by gossiping can be tantamount to the same kind of harm that can be caused when you physically harm someone. So there are so many terrible sins that we could commit. Why do you think God places so much importance on a simple thing like what we say and how we say it? Because he does. We read some of those scriptures.
Because what I say can either save or lose a soul.
Either save or lose a soul, period. Because our influence can make people go, I'm never doing that. I'm never going there. I don't want to be where those people are. It can create animosity. It can create people who actually want to harm the church. What, Mother?
It grows.
It grows
from person to person.
You know that little game when you were a kid, gossip, where you talk and it's a completely different thing at the end? And that all of us, I'll bet, have had an experience where somebody has said something about us. And when the final version of it got back to us, it was nothing like what had really happened. So one of the things we talk about in communication is what I say may not be what you hear. And that's where we have to really work on those skills to make sure that we're speaking in such a way that somebody really understands. And we have to work as listeners to really hear what's being said and not just come up with our opinion as it starts. Okay, so it can cause someone to have their soul saved or lose their soul. What are some other things that would be, I hesitate to say, more minor, but not in that huge impact like that?
Well, what you speak is a lot of times truly what's in your heart. I mean, it comes out.
Right.
You may not mean to say it, but, oh, that's what you were thinking, or that's what you...
Right. It's impossible to speak words you haven't thought about. You may not have thought well or long or carefully, but it is impossible to say words that aren't in your head. What does this say to us about living in the world surrounded by the kind of language that we hear? It is so difficult, I think, to keep our language pure simply because we are surrounded by it in workplaces, in school. Now, that's one of the advantages of surrounding yourself with Christian friends. It helps eliminate some of that, but you're still, you know, there are times, it always embarrasses my children, which is really just a bonus, but I have turned around to people and said, would your mother be happy if she heard you say that? Mm-hmm. And I'm so tired of even just coarse language, not necessarily evil language, all around you, all the time. People have lost their ability to speak with a reasonable vocabulary, and it frustrates me. And all you have to do is be around a small child whose father curses when he hits his thumb, you know, with a hammer, and you know what was being said at home, because it comes right out. So I think the way this question is worded is to get us to say the sins of communication and the sins of the tongue are terrible sins. We tend to not rank them there. Oh, well, I was angry. Is that a reason to speak that way? No, all that actually does is point out that you can't control your tongue and you can't control your temper. It just points right back to you. Or, well, that was impulsive. I know I shouldn't have said that, but... And very rarely do people say, I should not have said that, I'm sorry. They want to defend it. Well, I shouldn't have said it, but he caused me to be angry, or blah, 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 blah.
Be angry and sin not.
So we know it's possible. God wouldn't have told us to do something we can't do. Number three.
What page are we
15.
On?
Okay. Discuss the difference between listening with your ears and listening with your heart. Is there a difference?
Yeah.
How does that manifest itself? You're after services and somebody's talking to you and they say, you know, this has really been a tough week. Well, your ears hear it and maybe you say, I am so sorry, I hope it's better. But maybe what your heart should be hearing is, I really need a friend to talk to. I need to have more of a conversation than just saying those few words and having you pat me on the head. So sometimes caught up in our own world and our own problems and our own struggles, we forget that we need to be that person that can listen and help without trying to overpower. Now, if it's an issue of sin, then we have no choice. Here's what has to be done. But if it's just an issue of, I might not have handled it that way, then if they want my opinion, I can give it. But at that point, it needs to quit. You have to let people come up with their own things, and sometimes they just need a sounding board. They need a place to talk.
I call it listening actively.
Active listening.
I had something else to say, but it's gone.
When it comes back, let us know.
And sometimes you need to talk to someone other than the person you normally talk to.
Right.
You need to go for it.
Different perspective, mm-hmm. A different way of looking at things, because someone that you know really well, now I'll use you and Bonnie because we're very, very close friends, you kind of know what that person's going to say, mm-hmm. How they're going to react. Mm-hmm. And while that's good and valuable, if somebody has a different view on it, they may bring in something you never thought about. Mm-hmm. You never thought about looking at it that way. Mm-hmm. And it can be really valuable. Plus, there's just a piece of communication that it sounds strange when you talk about it, but it's the reason counselors and therapists actually help. Sometimes talking to someone you don't know allows you to talk about deeper things because you don't have to worry about seeing them again.
More freely.
You don't have to be their friend. You don't have to worry that a year down the road they're going to go, you know, when you told me, blah, blah, blah. So there's some safety in talking to someone you don't know well. Now, I wouldn't advise you to just grab somebody off the street and start talking to them. They might call the cops or something. But sometimes looking outside that normal circle of friends can be helpful. And we have so many resources here. We have so many people who care about us, who would take that time, who would listen and be helpful to us. And I don't think we always use that. What can this mean? And we'll talk later in a couple of lessons about children. What's the difference between listening with your ears with your kids and listening with your heart with your kids as they're growing up?
You better be listening with both.
You better. Because sometimes kids can't or won't tell you
the story. They say one thing, but they're talking about something else.
Right.
And it's hard.
It is hard. You know,
the answer, it's okay. It's okay, but
yeah,
you know, I did that in American Power School today.
Yeah. What else is in there? Well, are the teenage girls that comes home and says, he doesn't like me anymore? And when you listen long enough, it kind of turns into nobody likes me and I don't feel wanted and accepted and loved, because that's a pretty common thing for teenagers to feel as they're trying to move into adulthood. But maybe you need to hear more than that one statement and say, as a mom is wont to do, well, you didn't need him, there's a better one. And that's probably true, but that may not be what they need to hear right at that moment.
Especially as teenagers, there's no little.
There's
everything
no little.
Is huge.
There's no little.
So you need to be careful, like you said, and sit down with, you know, don't just listen while you're doing the dishes. Stop.
Right.
Look at them.
Pay attention.
Yes.
I remember one time Clay was about 14 or 15, and he was talking about some car that he wanted when he could drive. he wanted this car, and it was way out of his price range. And, you know, and I said, Clay, why don't you start thinking about a car you might actually be able to afford? And he looked at me and said, dream killer. You know, that's probably true. I should have just let him go on about the car and say, that'd be great. I hope you get to do that. He knew he couldn't have it. I knew he couldn't have it. I should have just let him talk and have that dream. So I've worked pretty hard at that one, actually, to not
parents have to learn too.
I told him he's the experimental model. I was just learning. Question number 5. How can a parent or a Bible teacher use the concept of feedback, and what happens when you don't? What is the concept of feedback?
Forgot what they talked about.
Laura?
Well, because I don't want to talk at the children. I want to talk to them, and I want to know that they're receiving what I'm hearing. So a lot of times with them, I'll throw stuff in there, and I'll say something that's off to see if they're listening.
If they're in there.
And then they'll come back, and they'll look at me really funny so that I know they're getting it. But they have to talk to me, too.
Correct. So. Feedback is giving back something about what you've said so you know it's been received. So in a Bible class, it's particularly important working with children. We don't know what they don't know sometimes. We assume some things. And I think I've told you all this story before, but I had a friend who was a religious person, sort of. You know, if you ask her, she would say she was religious. She didn't do much to do anything about it. But she worked for us, and she came to work one day just almost ashen. And I said, what happened? And she said, Mark, who was 6 at the time, asked me last night, who's this Jesus person I keep hearing about? And she was stunned and appalled that he didn't know about Jesus. Well, how would he? So sometimes we think kids are catching stuff just by osmosis. And he'd heard the name. It didn't mean anything to him. So I think it's really important that we review in a way that we find out. To just go back over and go, here's what we studied, blah, 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 blah. They need to let us know where they are so we can know where to begin teaching. Yes,
I was sitting in on about a 3- and 4-year-old class one time in East Texas because I was visiting that church. And this teacher had a little boy in the class, and she was stressing how important Jesus was and how we could depend on Jesus, you know. And then she turned around and said, who is the most important? Who can you always depend on to be there when you need them? And nobody said anything. And finally, her little boy held up his hand. He said, the postman.
Always there.
He was so embarrassed.
Well, sometimes we can teach and it isn't caught. We can throw it out there and it's not caught.
That's feedback. That's something happened there.
Right. Well, the feedback was good. She knew she hadn't made her point somehow, and she had to go back over it. Number 8, why do we engage in superficial conversation more frequently than meaningful conversation? Is it good? If not, how can we change it? That's what I would call small talk. Why do we engage in that more often than meaningful talk? There are a lot of reasons. To be friendly.
I'm not really interested.
Not really interested in the meaningful conversation?
And what can you talk about?
Yeah. Have you ever known somebody that when you said, how are you? Well, I had back surgery 2 weeks ago, and I got to tell you, it's just, and you get the next 30 minutes of how they are. Most people, sadly, when they say, how are you, what do they want to hear?
Nothing.
Nothing or fine. Mm-hmm. Thanks. How are you? Mm-hmm. It's a conventional piece of small talk to kind of go back and forth with. So small talk's easier. We do it to be friendly. We do it to fill in awkward silences. Wow, the weather's been really nice. You know, anything we can think about. But it's also expected in our culture. I actually taught a class where students would come from all over Tarleton campus, and we had a business etiquette dinner. And we spent time talking about small talk and practicing small talk. Because in a business situation, if you go and you just stand there, you're not going to do very well. So how would that translate to it being somewhat valuable here?
Visitors.
Bonnie. I think it's also a valuable tool, and we can use it just as a throwaway thing a lot, but it is something that will put you at ease with someone else and can lead to more meaningful conversations.
Right. It opens up the ability to have more meaningful conversations.
And you can, if you're actively listening, you can pick up on the little cues in the small talk that there's something else to talk about.
Right. It gives you a ladder to move forward. And as Debbie said, visitors, you're not going to walk up to a visitor, somebody you've never seen, and say, what do you think is the most important scripture that you've studied in the last 3 weeks? Because they're kind of going to go, I wasn't ready for that question. I don't think I can answer it. Or, how do you feel about marriage, divorce, and remarriage? You know, it's not where you're going to go when somebody walks in. You're going to make those conversations. You're going to find the bridge to move into more important conversations. You're going to make them feel comfortable.
And by the way, we have people in our congregation who have taken visitors and approached them with things like that. It's very, I think, inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, and it's often something that would cause the visitor not to return. I don't mean we should not have those conversations with people.
Oh, exactly.
But possibly when they first walk in the door, it's not the most appropriate time to do it. Well, you need to get to know them a little bit, and they need to get to know you. I never want any of this to be misinterpreted as we don't preach the full counsel. We do, and we talk about the important things, and we talk about the things that are life-changing and soul-saving. But there is a way to approach people. Okay. 9, just kind of a little throwaway question. What are your pet peeves when it comes to communication? What bothers you? Debbie, did you have one?
Oh, no, that was one of them. I got ahead.
Well, I talk a lot. I like to talk. I like to have my turn. So when I'm with somebody and they won't let me talk, ever, I get a little annoyed by that. Debbie?
I just thought of something these days with our kids and their phones.
Yeah.
And I just talk to, you know, it, worship service. And they're like, Mom, nobody thinks anything of it. I said, I do. You know, if you're standing there on your phone at church, no one's going to come up and start talking
right.
to you. It says to me,
go
I'm
away.
Not interested
go
in talking to anybody, you know.
Yeah.
So, I like to get on my soapbox about 30 minutes on this. I have threatened, and I think I'm going to do this, put a basket at our back door where all the automation thing goes in that when you come in.
You'll have
visit.
To haul your computer up there too then and your cell phone.
Yeah, well, that's where they go, not that I'm on them.
Gee, just like you said that you had this class where you had a dinner and learned small talk and how to survive something like that, I think our teenagers are going to have to learn that yes, you do have to put that phone down.
Well, they have been brought up to think it's not rude. They've been
exactly.
brought up to believe that you can have these multiple conversations,
yeah.
which means you're not paying attention to anybody. And the thing that finally teaches most of them is when they send a text message to the wrong person because they've got 4 going mm-hmm. and they sent something they didn't mean to send. And that kind of makes people go, oh. And it is a maturity thing, too. I've watched my kids be less and less and less involved with that kind of stuff. So part of it, I think, is teenage and young adult desire to disconnect from the old folks by being with their friends almost exclusively. I mean, mother...
All the more reason why it should be...
Yeah, good reasons.
I don't want people disconnected.
But I remember lying on the floor with the telephone for hours when I was about 16.
Just build up the whole hall.
I did. On the floor, put my feet up on the seat, talking for hours.
Time limits.
Yeah.
For my teenagers.
Well, I was the only teenager in the building at the time. You know,
oh,
we were so spread apart, the 3 kids, that she's like she had teenagers 3 separate times.
That's your time and the condition.
That's right. It's our fault.
Hearing and not listening, that's what I tell my kids. And I've got to where if we go have dinner, I'll say, okay, leave your phone alone, please, because
right.
they're hearing your conversation, but they're not listening.
Well, you can hear words without listening.
You know,
I was in the dining room and had the door closed, and I could hear Roger's voice. I knew he was trying to say something to me, but I couldn't understand him, so it was not communication until I could come back out where I could hear what he was saying. Laura?
In that same way, I think it's a respectful thing to look at somebody when you're talking to them.
It is.
People turn away.
It is. That's actually cultural, though. If you're dealing with some of the Hispanic cultures, the kids, and the Asian cultures particularly, the kids are taught not to look adults in the eye,
right.
That it's disrespectful. So you just do have to be aware of some of those things. Now, in our culture, yes, look at me when I'm talking to you. So,
not that, but like when they're mauling at me or they're moving away.
Oh, I know.
I always tell them, I have a hard time hearing. I had a hearing loss warning. So when somebody like Mark is just really, he'd be turning away. And I could not understand what he was saying. And I'd be like, look at me, because I'm trying to rehearse. I can't do it. Look at me when you're talking.
Here's my communication pet peeve. If we're out to dinner or something, and Roger's real bad about this, although I'm training him and it's getting better. Somebody's going to talk and they do this. I don't hear well.
Yeah.
And when I've lost the cues of their lips moving, I can't understand. So somebody's sitting like this talking to me, I can't communicate.
Am I the only one that thinks that all teenagers talk extremely fast and low? It's like they're whispering to you.
They mutter.
Yeah, in the fastest language that they can speak. I'm going, wait.
I just tell people I have southern ears, and they listen more slowly than that. We talk more slowly, and my ears listen more slowly.
We need some teenagers here to defend themselves. Don't
yeah.
We?
Sarah and Bonnie are as close as we've got, so speak up. But I do think the phone thing is a big issue about not trying to do other things while you're talking to someone. It's just like you shouldn't try to read a book when somebody's talking to you. Books. You remember books. You've seen books in your lifetime.
Yes.
I'm being facetious.
Oh, I'm like, yes.
There's a lot of kids that go. Yeah, it's a trick question. There's a lot of kids that don't. You know, if it's not on a Kindle or a Nook, they don't know how to read them. So, again, staying in the moment really is what it's about. Whether you're preoccupied with what... And let's not just accuse the young people. We can be preoccupied with what else is going on in our lives. And while we may look like we're paying attention, we may not be. Particularly sometimes to children. It's... We have a tendency to kind of put that aside. And they may be saying something really, really important that we need to know about, and that may be our only chance to know.
Can I say mm-hmm. that I understand entirely like what everyone is saying about the whole phone thing, mm-hmm. but I do also know that there's sometimes whenever I am talking to someone, I think a lot of the kids when they're talking to adults, it's a nervous issue. They don't know what to say, and that's all that they know. That's their comfort zone.
I think you could be right.
They don't know what to do.
A way to keep their hands busy and not have to focus in. I think you're absolutely right.
So I think that may work, and I don't know. I guess that's just something that everybody has to understand, and you have to be understanding. If someone does do that, it's not that they're trying to be rude, even though it is.
Right.
They just don't know what to do.
Their motivation. So we need to help each other. You know, we need to be able to say to somebody, I see that you're on the phone. If you need to finish that conversation, I'll let you do that, because I'd like for us to have, you know, to be fully engaged. And kids have to learn these things. It's not automatic. We have to be patient and teach them. I walked into a store a few months ago. Actually, I was with some friends out of town, and we were going to go get a pedicure. And we walked into the salon. There's nobody in it, which was our first clue. And I mean nobody. Not even workers. Just this one guy. And so we were kind of going, no, I don't think so. But he was on the phone, and he's talking, and he looked at me and said, yes, and I said, I'll wait. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try to engage you in conversation when you're already in a conversation. And he finally got off, and we decided he was too creepy, and we left. But, you know, he owned a business and wasn't willing to put that phone down. Now, my mother will tell you I'm on the phone a lot. It's not my fault. I'm not calling people. They're calling me. But I did have a moment when my children were young. Clay was a young teenager, so the girls were little. And Randy was leaving, and Clay told me one time, we can't get in touch with Dad. Often we can't get in touch with him, but we always know we can call you. And I thought, if that's important enough for a 14-year-old boy to say out loud, then that's when my phone started being a part of me. So, but in my defense, other people call me. I don't call them. children are the worst. So when my children complain about it, I say, it's you guys that are creating this. So that's my pet peeve, the one I can't hear. And Mother's is about the texting and all. And I think Debbie, you're the one that said that originally. Anybody else have anything they want to throw out there that maybe we can all improve on? Buddy?
Not getting feedback. It's so important to consciously give feedback. That's something I struggle with too. It's like, because I want to say something meaningful. Sometimes you just need to let them know you heard.
Yes.
Because it's just kind of like talking to a wall.
It doesn't always have to be profound. Yeah. It does not always have to be profound. Sometimes you just have to let people know they're important enough that you heard them. Yeah.
Something you can help me on. If one of my biggest pet peeves is, like she said, not getting that feedback. And if somebody's, it's like they say they're listening to you, but that's, a lot of people blame it on like ADHD. They cannot just look in one place. They can't just sit in one place. They've got to be doing something. Whenever I don't get that feedback, it frustrates me.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that and not be rude about it and say...
You say just
if
that.
If you're not going to listen to me, I'm not going to talk.
Well, that you don't say it that way. But you say, for me to feel comfortable, for me to feel like we're having an actual conversation, I need to know what you're thinking. I need some feedback from you. And when you're busy doing other things, it's very difficult for me to feel like we've engaged in a conversation.
Okay.
But don't tell them you're making me crazy because you won't sit still. And for the most part, people can control that. There are some people who absolutely cannot. But there are some people who can control it. Okay. From a lifetime of experience, what have you learned that helps you communicate with others? I'll start. I have learned, not well and not completely, but better than I used to be, to keep my mouth shut. I have learned that if I don't talk, sometimes that's better. Now, that's really hard for me. I like to talk. I'm very opinionated, and I think I know a lot of stuff. I want to share it with you. So just being quiet sometimes is the very best solution, and a very difficult thing for me that I'm working real hard on. And if any of you see me not doing it when I should, it's okay for you to tell me, because I'm working on it. So what are some other things you've learned?
Well, like you said too, you emphasized more there. So when someone starts getting loud or unruly with their speech, or almost shouting, if you quiet down your voice,
bring it back. Mm-hmm. You have some control over what's going on in that conversation.
Mm-hmm. And the time of it.
And you have the ability to stop a fight. If you're involved in an argument, you have the ability to stop it. How can you do that?
Well, change the tone of your voice. For me.
Yeah,
walk out the door. Walk out the door.
Take a deep breath. Count.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you have to say things like, you're making me too angry to discuss this right now. I've got to do it later. I don't think it's wrong to tell people that they've made you angry. Whether you should be angry or not, you're telling them how you feel at that moment, and maybe you can come back later and fix the issue. Pat, you look like you want to tell me something. No?
Me?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I was listening, I promise.
I was looking for feedback.
No.
I think what you said that you've learned is the biggest thing that I think everyone needs to learn. Is sometimes it's better to not say anything than to say something, because especially like when you're mad, it's better to just not say anything at all.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times that you're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Or just agree to let it be. I don't even have to agree that I agree with what you're saying. And the hardest time for me, but the times that have been most valuable to not talk, is when I feel I've been wronged. And I want to defend myself, and I want to jump in and say, why? You're wrong, and I'm right, and you shouldn't have said that to me. Because long term, that rarely solves anything. So that's the hardest time, but I have learned it to be the most valuable. Just to quit. And gave me ulcers for a while. I don't like it. I like to tell people what I think. I'm a teacher. It's in my blood to tell people what I think. But to just be quiet can be very, very valuable.
Well, letting go of the last word that's something I've had to struggle with. It's like, I don't have to have the last word.
Even though mine would be
I
so
really
good.
The last word. Sometimes it's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, but valuable, because the problem is the other person's thinking the same thing. You never get to the last word. It just goes on and on. It gets louder and more intense. And then things are said that a year from now you still remember. You know?
Mostly that with my kids. Sometimes I just can't let, you know, they're there. And I just keep on and stand and say, Dad, let it go. Let it go. It's not for it. I like to think I've got a little better. But
well, we're all the work in progress.
The mother in us.
All working. Well, and when I know so well that what I'm saying is right, you know, I just know it is. Why can't they see it?
Sometimes they do, but they don't want to hear it.
That's right. And they haven't learned the be quiet rule yet.
No.
But because that does come with maturity for most people.
I have found out that what I've said comes back around.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes years.
Yes.
But it does.
Well, with one of my children in particular, I've learned that if I say something, that child probably won't do it at that moment. But almost always, it comes back. Okay, so do we have any time left? What time is it? We've just been yakking like crazy. We got a little bit of time. Chapter 2 is about nonverbal communication. And so I liked her introduction. When your chocolatey mouth, sticky-fingered little toddler hangs his head and insists he did not sneak a cookie, do you believe him? Not so much. Or when your husband slams his hand on the table and declares, I am not angry. Really? Because what you're doing tells me a different story. So, and then the other one, tell me all about your trip, and then they can't wait to get away when you... But now, in defense of that one, travel logs can be too long. Travel logs can be too long. My experience has been people want to hear about 3 minutes of your trip, and then they're finished. When you bring out the second DVD, they're going to go home. Roger tells about a meeting he went to one time, work meeting, and some presentation guy. This back when we had slide carousels, you know, those round things that had, I don't know, 70 or 80 slides in them. And this guy went through one, and they're all just, and then he went through the second one, and they're finally going, okay, we're out here. And then he brought out a third one. And he said, it just erupted into almost violence. Just, no way. No way we're doing that. And even David wrote about it. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. And here it says, claims it makes up to about 70% of what we communicate to others. And we talked a little about nonverbal the last time we were together. And the statistics will go anywhere from about 45% to up as far as 90%. If somebody's really angry, we have a very hard time masking anger in our nonverbal communication. Our eyes and our face, our stance, the tenseness of our body. We have most people, that's why lie detector tests work, because it's physical reactions to lies, and your heart speeds up and your breathing increases and you get sweaty and all these things happen that your body does when you're in an uncomfortable situation. So we may actually, we probably have almost as much trouble masking like a new love situation. You know, you look at these kids that are madly in love, and their body stance is different. They just almost kind of melt, and their eyes are different, and their face gets softer, and their mouth gets softer. So our body language tells a lot about what we're really doing. It's very difficult to lie through your body. The people that can do that are generally con artists who've worked very, very hard at masking. Poker players, professional poker players, worked very, very hard at keeping their body from showing, giving anything away. Paul said, at the top of page 17, he commended Philemon for his love and faith, which Paul said enabled the communication of Philemon's faith to be effectual. His love and his faith showed up in his working with people. So, no matter how good a religion we talk, we'll never convince anyone, certainly not God, unless we communicate the same message by the way we live. The walk has to meet the talk. And I think we're all very aware of that in big ways.
I wonder how aware we are sometimes in the small ways. There's a visitor or just somebody in the congregation, and we walk past them without saying hello because we're angry about something else, or we're busy, or we're, our brain is somewhere else. We have to be engaged. We have to be fully aware. How many times have you heard someone through the grapevine, somebody say, well, I didn't think that congregation was very friendly? Ever hear that?
Said it myself.
Yeah. And have, you know, from that side, from the visitor side, have we given them the opportunity to be friendly? Have we done what we need to do? Because if you walk in the door and they're starting and you dash out the door before anybody can turn around and pick up their purse, you haven't done much to help them be friendly. On the other hand, if everybody in the congregation is all involved in the same little group that they always are involved with, and they're not talking to other people in the congregation or the visitors, it leaves an impression. Yes, ma'am.
I have to say that as opposed to another congregation in Fort Worth that I went to several times, and the preacher spoke to me once, I walked up to this door. I didn't even get to open the door. Somebody opened the door and invited me in.
Yay!
And it's been that way ever since I've been here. And it's such an open and friendly group.
Good.
Oh, we need that.
Yeah, we need to hear that. Thank you.
Well, when I think something, you're going to hear it.
No problem with that piece of communication.
No, that communication. Well, I believe if you have something to say to someone, you need, like a preacher I heard recently say, don't wait and walk up to the casket and say, that was the most wonderful person I ever knew.
Yeah.
Tell them while they can hear it.
Right. And if somebody comes here and they think we're not a friendly congregation, they need to tell us that too. We need to work on it. We need to be more inviting. Now, I was at a congregation this last week while I was gone, and they were friendly. People talked to me. But I kind of did a little experiment because I got there early, and there was this group of people, maybe five or six people, standing there talking in the lobby, and a couple of men standing at the door. And when I walked in, they didn't speak. And then I went over and just kind of stood behind that group and looked at the track rack, and nobody turned around, nobody said hello. Other people did speak to me. But it was just an example of how we can get involved in what we're doing and thinking about. And I imagine they didn't even really see me there, you know, because they were engaged in a conversation. But it did make an impression, you know, because I kind of made a habit of standing there a few minutes to give them that opportunity. And one man said, excuse me, and pushed past me to get to where he needed to be. So I think we can all improve on that. And I have to tell you all a funny story. It has nothing to do with the class. There was a young man who led singing, and he was probably 19 or 20, and he had some kind of developmental delay. I don't know what it was specifically, but you could tell by looking at him there was something. Beautiful singing voice. But he didn't have a pitch pipe, and so he stood up there and he went, whoo, and then he sang. Did a great job on the singing. But he knew everybody did that and got that note, so... So we have to walk the walk. And part of that is being friendly and outgoing. And that's not a given for everybody. Some people are shy. It's hard for them to do that. So some of us have to work harder on that than others. I pretty much talk to a brick wall. You know, it doesn't bother me to go up and talk to someone. One of the ladies there had a great line, I thought. She came up and she introduced herself. She said, am I supposed to know you? And I said, no. And she said, well, at my age, I keep forgetting. And I said, well, I like your approach. I'm not sure who you are, but I'll find out.
I'll use that line.
Yes. Am I supposed to know you? I liked it. I'll probably say it, too.
I think with what you're saying, it also comes with, you know, not everybody is privileged enough to have a class like this to where we are taught about how we should act whenever visitors are around and whenever other people are, you know, here, and they may not feel as comfortable. So whenever we do go and visit other places, mm-hmm. we can't wear our heart on our sleeves, and we have to remember that they may not have been blessed enough to have something like this to teach them how to be with others.
Right.
So instead of just automatically just writing them off and saying that they weren't friendly, we should probably just, you know, go and introduce ourselves.
Right.
And it's a hard step. I'm not good at it at all.
It is a hard step.
But I do know it's something that I need to work on.
But
my husband and I practiced that when we used to travel some, go to a new place, and we would introduce ourselves to people.
Yep. And it makes it easier for them sometimes because they're looking and going, I don't know these people, what do I say to them? You know.
And so, am I supposed to know them?
Right. Am I supposed to know you? I like that line a lot.
There was a young man here Sunday night, and we had not met him until he'd everybody gone. He was over at the bulletin board. So we walked over and introduced ourselves. And he just has moved here. I'm sure others maybe know his name. I've forgotten it already. But he's looking for a place to worship.
Jonathan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was at Weatherford last night.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. He was at the meeting. Yeah. Okay, let's look at one more paragraph.
We're better than they are. Come here.
I started to tell him that. What are you doing here? Decided that wouldn't be the best form of communication. Do as I say, not as I do. Such a desire in parents to say that. And part of it is because we've learned some things. And maybe it should be, don't do as I did. Do as I tell you to do. But you can't teach a child one thing and do something else in front of them. You can talk it, but you're not going to teach it. You're not going to teach it. There's some commercial, I don't think it's on anymore, but a little boy, and I think it's for Coke or something, but they're walking, he and his dad are walking, and everything his dad does, he does. You know, his dad reaches down, picks up a stick, and he picks up a stick, and his dad puts his hands behind his back, and he does it. Well, there is one, that was a long time ago, where he started smoking a cigarette, and the little boy picked up a stick and did it. But they're going to do what you do, and to say, I hope you never smoke, doesn't have much of an impact. Or, I know, I really want you to be in services, but, you know, I have yet another ailment and I won't go again this week. And I think that's a very easy habit to fall into, even for people who want to be here. When you're physically tired or something doesn't feel quite right, it's so easy to say, well, I won't go this time. Even though your heart really kind of wants to be here, your body's taken over. And so I think we have to struggle with that as human beings. Since, of course, sometimes there are times we can't, but there are times that we could probably work through it if we chose to. So I lived someplace one time, and I won't even say where, but it was a long, long time ago. And I never thought there'd be a time in my life that I woke up every Sunday morning thinking, surely I'm ill, because I didn't want to be there. And that was a struggle. That was a big struggle for me to continue to go to worship. And I didn't think that could happen to me. I like being here. It's where I want to be. When I went to church Wednesday night, I was traveling with a friend that I work with who is totally a non-religious person. And I, of course, invited her to services, and she, of course, turned me down. But she kept saying, well, if you stayed, we could blah, blah, blah. And I said, I want to go. This is not just an obligation. I want to be there. It recharges me. It refreshes me for the rest of the week. So I'm going. Love for you to come with me, but if you're not going to come, that's okay. But I'm going. But I don't think a lot of people can understand that because they don't have what we have. Well, I talked a lot and we still didn't finish this, so we're still going to be on chapter 2 next week for a little bit. This book could take us... We're in the stand mode.
That's
this book
okay.
could take a lot longer than I thought it would. Any questions, comments, anything we need to wrap up before we get out of here?